Welcome to Family Talk with your host, psychologist and author, Dr. James Dobson. I'm Ryan Dobson, here with my co-host, Lou Ann Crane. Dad and Lou Ann, yesterday we began one of the most spellbinding and frankly horrific interviews I've heard in a very long time.
That's because we began hearing the story of Mr. Bill Meyer, Ryan, a survivor of the Holocaust. So parents can already see that this program will not be appropriate for children probably under the ages of 12 or 13 because our guest, a doctor, spent time as a child in a concentration camp in Holland during World War II. His is a story of survival and forgiveness, but more than that, it's really a warning to all of us on how depraved humanity can become.
Luann, I really don't know how to put into words what kind of atrocities took place during World War II under the Hitler Nazi regime. And the truth is that there are evil people out there who would repeat that atrocity if they could. And that's why we must remain strong and vigilant and resolute. Now, we talked last time about the 11 million defenseless, innocent people who were murdered by the Nazis, and 6 million of them were Jews. It was an incomprehensible slaughter that we must not forget and never allow to be repeated. And yet, as you mentioned last time, Luann, millions are being persecuted for their faith today, including Christians in the Sudan and other places. So we still need to be vigilant.
Well, yes, Doctor. In fact, this coming Sunday is designated as the International Day of Prayer for the Persecuted Church. You know, looking at a number of statistics from different organizations, it's estimated that as many as 200 million Christians in 60 different countries are denied basic, fundamental human rights simply because of their faith.
And, you know, we not only must pray for the Christians who are going through that kind of persecution, but for people of all faiths and all nationalities. I know we all agree on that. Now, let's talk a little more about our guest on today's program. His name is Bill Meyer, and he grew up in Holland during the war and lived just around the corner from Corrie Ten Boom. I knew her. I loved her. She was a great lady. And Bill shared yesterday about helping Corrie rescue Jews when he was a boy. He was only 12 years old. And he served as a courier on his bicycle, delivering documents, false IDs, and weapons, and even some Jewish boys to safety in the countryside. But he was eventually caught by the Gestapo, and 18 members of his family were murdered by the Nazis. 18.
Including his mom and dad right there in front of him. It's beyond heartbreaking.
Well, he was then moved to a concentration camp where men died every day, whether it be from starvation or disease or torture. And he told us yesterday how his own cousin, just a little girl, was hanged by the Nazis to punish him for what he had done. And not with a hangman's rope, but with a simple piece of rope. And she strangled there, and he had to watch her struggle for 30 minutes before she died. You know, the level of brutality was just almost incomprehensible.
Doctor, it's just beyond my imagination to think of what was going through Mr. Meyer's little mind there at the tender age of 13 or 14. I have a 14-year-old son right now. I cannot imagine that. And yet that's exactly what we heard him describe yesterday.
Well, it's a testimony to the human spirit that a child could even live a normal life after that. I don't understand that, but there are many examples of it.
Well, Bill Meyer and his wife Josephine are a classic example of that. They live in Indiana, and we're really blessed that he would share his story with us in the hope that the Holocaust is never forgotten. So let's continue with the rest of the story here now on this Family Talk broadcast.
Now, Bill, thanks for being with us again today. And I want to start with this question. You didn't tell this story for a long time. You held it inside. You didn't even tell your wife about most of it until 15 years or so ago. But now you are sharing it. Why do you feel it's important for people to hear this very, very difficult story?
My own oldest son says, "Dad, stop talking about it. This is 65 years ago. Why do you do it? I don't want to forget one single victim. Not one. Innocent victims. 2.5 million children under the age of 13. 2.5 million, or at least 2 million they know of. Children, defenseless little children, were killed because only they were Jew."
Were most of the people you were there with Jewish?
Most of them. In Vught, it was a camp from Vught to Westerbork and then Auschwitz. Us non-Jews stayed in Vught. I was never in a concentration camp where they called an extermination camp.
That was Auschwitz.
That was Auschwitz. And
they went from your camp to Auschwitz.
Through
but
Westerbork,
you were not sent there.
Never. I stayed there all the time.
And we know what happened to them there. They were gassed.
Yeah, we had a crematorium right outside our camp. And during roll call, I dirtied myself. And I thought, if they catch me, I'd be beaten to death. And I couldn't stand it anymore. So during the day, I crawled in the carts where the dead bodies were in to be deposited in the crematorium.
In with the other bodies?
Yeah, the dead ones. During the night, I crawled out, and somehow they didn't see me, and I got out.
They would throw those bodies into a pit.
Pits, and then burn them in the crematorium later, or they put lime on them. Lime, daily. Yeah. When I was there, they did not put lime over the bodies, which is, in my book, a miracle, because they threw lime over them daily. I thought if I get just out before they throw the lime on it, but I had no chance, and they did not throw lime on it that day.
So during the night, you crawled out?
Somehow, yeah.
And how did you get out of the camp?
Well, this was outside the camp. They dumped the bodies outside the camp. The crematorium was outside the camp's parameters.
You must have been in horrible health. You must have been emaciated.
I was about 45 pounds. In American pounds, probably 60 pounds.
Weak,
yeah, I was
sick.
As tall as I was now. My arms were sticks and my belly was, of course, swollen twice the size. I had TB.
And you began walking?
Somehow. I got in the stable and was a cow. Now, I'm a city slicker. I didn't know how to get the milk out of the cow into my body. I pulled and I pulled, but no milk came out and all the noise, the farmer's wife came out and knew I was no threat to her, and she put me in warm clothes, but she said she had some American flyers, pilots. I had to leave because I would put the pilots in danger. She gave me a warm coat and some food. From then on, I was on my own. I walked all the way home.
How far?
I have no idea. I think it's 100 miles.
And you got to your hometown?
Well, everybody was gone.
Is that when you found out they were dead?
Yeah, in those days, families who betrayed people who helped Jews would get their house, their belongings, their food ration cards. Anything they owned would go to the betrayer. And that's where they came out of the woodwork. Families against families, brothers against brothers and sons against fathers.
Did you ever know who betrayed you?
No. And you know, till today, I wouldn't judge them either. I had only to take care of my own, but if you had been a father and your children are hungry, without food for weeks or days, what would you have done? The line between a hero and a traitor is very thin indeed. My family calls me a traitor. I caused my family to be killed, in a way.
Mm-hmm. Because you were trying to save those children.
A hero, a most righteous person. Well, if I am a most righteous person in the world, then the world is in bad shape.
Do you have guilt over that today?
Guilt? Questions, yes, guilt. I did what I did, and I was a kid, and I question it.
Well, let's pick up the story there. You've now escaped and you're back in your hometown. The war ends. What now?
No, the war was not ended yet. I still had a half year to go. We were not liberated till May 45. South Holland was liberated already. North Holland was occupied till 45.
What was the Gestapo doing at that time?
Not much anymore the last half year. They were pretty much defeated at that time. We lived a life of misery. All the food was taken by the Germans. But there is a story, I do not know if I can even recall it, but in Europe, prostitution is legal. And you have a red light district. I knew that my sister was a prostitute. So I went to Rotterdam, where I knew she lived, trying to find her. That's a city of probably 200,000 at that time. I did not know where she lived, what she worked. So I went to most of the brothels, got me a little piece of bread, a little piece of chocolate, a little sip of tea, or whatever I could get from the ladies working the brothels. And that's how I stayed alive that half year. I got a little bit at each brothel till I found my sister.
And she was there?
She was a prostitute, yeah.
Was she then the only family member
yes.
that you had?
Yeah, I had one more sister. I didn't find her till after the war. I had two sisters left and myself.
Now, you had a third grade education.
Till today.
Till today.
I'm a third grader. That is my whole formal education till today, yeah. And I'm proud of it.
Well, you had no skills. You had
no
way to get a job. You had no money. You had no family.
No.
And Corey was gone, the great influence. How did you come to the United States?
They had an uprising in Hungary. Remember, the Russian invaded Hungary, and I thought, oh, there we go again. I was in Hungary to deliver fuel oil.
I think that was 1956 that occurred.
Whenever that was, yeah.
Yeah.
So I was in Hungary at the airport when these Russians came. I thought, now I'll be arrested again, and this time I will be killed. So I went to the American embassy, and they took me in. Then they arranged me for my wife to come to the American embassy. She came from Holland. I had two children, two boys. And they put me on a plane to New York. And there I was, without money, didn't speak English, start all over again in New York.
What kind of job did you get?
From 1957 to 1959, I had 32 jobs. I did anything and everything to get a job. I had to raise two children and one on the way.
And you didn't speak English at
all? Didn't speak English one word.
And you had no one to teach you? There was no formal training?
No education or a skill. But do you know something? I had any skill I needed. I did anything and everything. The first job was as a mechanic. But we have a metric system and you have a different system. Yeah. I knew how to repair a bicycle, but not a car.
They let you
go. There was a guy there. He said, "Don't worry, Billy. I sell cars. You can work for me selling cars." I had no idea what an engine was. We call it a motor. And I didn't know how to open the hoods on the side, the front, or the back. I didn't know anything about it. But I sold one car. To myself. I bought it. And I drove away and never came back. That was my second job. And I went on and on from one job to the next, some lasting a week, some 2 weeks, not knowing the language did me in or not even knowing what I was doing. If I had been offered the job of a neurosurgeon, I would have operated on you.
Whatever it took.
Sure, whatever.
Now, how did you come to know the Lord?
I never lost the Lord, but what happened during the war came back to me. Anything that was taught to me by Betsy came back to me. Mm-hmm. And I was a member of a Nazarene church. That church at that time was very protective of my family and helped me a lot. And if it wasn't for God, I couldn't have made it. Absolutely not.
Describe in greater detail your spiritual journey, because I know today you deeply love the Lord.
Absolutely.
And are trying to serve Him. Is the bitterness gone?
100%. I'm not bitter.
God when you were in the concentration camp.
Of course, there was no God. How can a God let this happening? You know, the answer came later when I found out that it is not God who does this. It is the human who does it.
Have you forgiven the guards?
Absolutely. Forgiveness sets you free.
If one of them walked in today
and
sat down with us here at the table,
how
would you react?
Dr. Dobson, I bought a house in Indianapolis, and my neighbor invited me for a cup of coffee. I went over, and I looked at the mantle, and they had a picture of a soldier in uniform, an SS uniform. I said, "Who is that?" I said, "That's me. I live next door to an SS officer for 36 years.
Were you friends with him?
Friends. We never had any trouble, the best neighbors we ever could be.
How do you explain that?
I cannot explain it except forgiveness. He had a story to tell just like mine. His family was taken by the Russians, so he fought for the Germans. Makes sense. And he immigrated to the United States and lived as my neighbor for 38 years. Miracle number two.
It's been all those years since you went through those horrible things as a child. Does your heart not break for the little boy you used to be?
Absolutely. Millions of kids. I've seen the babies torn away from their arms and killed. I've seen them whipped. Innocent little children under the age of 12 and 13. The only crime they did was being Jewish or help a Jew like we did.
Bill, do you see any relationship between the circumstances that brought that tragedy into being in the late 30s and 40s? And what we're seeing today in Western nations.
The times are identical today as it was in the 30s. And we again let it happen as we did in the 30s.
How?
Well, decent, God-fearing, good people let it happen in the 30s, don't you agree?
I do.
By their indifference, by their not speaking out. Those were good people, not barbarians. The ones who built the ovens were engineers. The one who killed the innocent people were doctors. The one who killed the babies were nurses. We're not talking about thieves and murderers. We're talking about educated people. And today, the anti-Semitism is worse in the world now, today, than it ever was in Adolf Hitler's time. In Europe, over 60% of those polled said that, quote, Israel was the greatest danger to peace. Israel should be wiped off the face of the earth. 60% of Europe, whose grandfathers and great-grandfathers were the perpetrators of the crime.
How about 40 million unborn children who have been killed? I mean, there's still plenty of evil in the world, isn't there?
And Hitler killed the innocent babies who were, you know, a little brain damaged, or the elderly who could not support the economy, the mentally ill, the gypsies. Homosexuals got rid of everybody. And today, the anti-Semitism is more vile than it was in Adolf Hitler's time. It's more openly proclaimed than it was then and there. We Christians are too timid sometimes. We don't want to fight and we don't want to judge people because our Bible says not to. But if some wrong is done, we should stand up and say, enough is enough. I will not stand for this. But we don't. We go to our own little churches and we pray and we are good people. But we cannot even agree within our Christian churches sometimes what is right and what is wrong. And I'm afraid that if America abandons Israel, that we'll be in a nuclear war.
I hope we don't do that.
I hope we don't.
And I'm not sure that we will.
I hope we won't.
Bill, recently you met one of the boys that you rescued on your bicycle.
Let me say this. We are not sure if it was him. It might well have been. But I was interviewed for Steven Spielberg in Ohio for the Holocaust Museum there, where my bicycle is hanging, by the way.
Is it really?
Yeah. But anyhow, I was interviewed and some of the Jews there said, would you mind be interviewed with this gentleman? And I said, "Hi, I'm Hans so-and-so." He said, "I was in Amsterdam as a Jew until a little boy took me to Friesland on his bicycle." Miracle number three. Now, we don't 100% sure that that is the boy and I am the boy.
Well, Bill, I'm sure it is difficult for you to open this chapter of your life and to talk about it. You suppressed it for so long. Now you have felt that it was time to reveal it.
About 10 years ago, yeah.
Only for the last 10 years.
Mm-hmm. Some gentleman, like, he might have said, "Now, Bill, aren't you exaggerating? Aren't you a little expanding on the truth?" And I knew that he didn't believe me. I decided then to speak out. It wasn't easy, and I had nightmares, and I had sweats, and the doctor gave me medicine, and that's what I told my wife. And through my church and through speaking out.
How did she react to it, Bill?
You do what you have to do. Very supportive, and I'm very sorry she can't be here.
Well, maybe you will bring her here.
Absolutely.
Next time.
I will come back for vacation and let her see this marvelous ministry you're doing.
I wish you would do that.
I've heard you a thousand times over the radio, and then I kind of slacked off the last few years. I did not even listen to it any longer because I had other things. But then I started to speak, and I get two or three a week invitations. Two or three a week.
Well, I don't know how to tell you this. You're going to get some more as a result of having been here.
Well, I'm because available.
It is available. A story that needs to be told.
Absolutely.
And give our regards to Josephine.
I sure will. And I hope you'll meet her sometime in the future.
Well, if you come with her, you'll see me.
Okay. That's a
blessings
date.
To you.
That's a date. Thank you.
And our thanks once again to Mr. Bill Meyer for opening up his life and his heart in this way on these last two Family Talk broadcasts. He and his wife, Josephine, live happily in Indiana. And Doctor, may we never, ever forget the horror of the Holocaust.
Mm-hmm. Lou Anne and Ryan, I think it would be appropriate for us to end the program today with Psalm 40, verses 1 through 3, which say, "I waited patiently for the Lord. He turned to me and heard my cry. He lifted me out of the slimy pit, out of the mud and mire, and he set my feet on a rock and gave me a firm place to stand. He put a new song in my mouth, a hymn of praise to our God. Many will see and fear the Lord and put their trust in him." And I think our guest, Bill Meyer, would believe that verse to be very applicable in his life. Mm-hmm. And by the way, as I was reading it, I'm reminded of a hymn that people don't sing in church anymore. I'm not going to sing it to you because even if I was not hoarse, which I still am to a degree, I at least can tell you the words. "He brought me out of the miry clay. Mm-hmm. He set my feet on a rock to stay. He puts a song in my heart today, a song of praise." Hallelujah. Do you remember that song?
I do remember
in church?
That. Oh, very much.
I think our guest may understand that verse and that hymn better than any of us, Dad.
Mm-hmm.
And for our listeners, if you are struggling with hurt in your life or tragedy, and you are ready to be free of that bitterness, as we have heard that Bill Meyer is as well, call us. Our lines are always open. It does not matter what time of day or what day it is. We have people waiting to hear from you. Our number is 877-732-6825.
Is it really possible for Christ to take the bitterness out of your heart, even the bitterness of the Holocaust? Could that be possible? And the answer is, yes, it can. And if that can occur in somebody who's been through an extermination camp, it can also occur for those who have been wounded by a brother, sister, mother, father, church member, or neighbor, or somebody that has taken the measure of you.
Oh, and Doctor, we want that freedom for everyone listening today. We would love to talk and pray with you so that you too can be set free, as we've heard today. We can even send you a copy of Dr. R.T. Kendall's book called Total Forgiveness, along with a CD of his conversation with you, Dr. Dobson, on that very topic.
And for parents of older children, we recommend you have them listen to this conversation, as well as get a copy of Corrie Ten Boom's book, The Hiding Place. And you can find both of those resources at familytalk.org, or once again, when you call, we'll have those available. Our number is 877-732-6825.
Thanks so much for staying with us today for this Family Talk broadcast, and be sure to join us next time for another edition of Family Talk with Dr. James Dobson.